Hey, Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin. My co-host this afternoon, as in the past, is Angela Lang from Block. Always a pleasure having you here, Angela.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Can you hear me?
And we've got Peter Barca. That's the voice of Peter Barca, who is running for Congress.
There we go. Terrific. Can you see me as well?
We sure can. In the backstage area. There we go.
Great. Glad to hear it.
So
great to be with you.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Angela and Matthew.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Peter. Peter Barca, for those who don't understand, is the former minority leader in the Assembly for the Democrats and the former Secretary of Revenue in the Evers administration. Peter Barca represented southeastern Wisconsin in the House of Representatives once before, and he's running again now in the 1st Congressional District, taking on Brian Stile. Peter Barca, tell us why you decided to run again for Congress.
Looks like we're having some slight technologic difficulties, and we've lost Peter for the moment. Oh, he's coming back right now.
Yeah.
All right.
There we go.
Peter, I just lobbed a softball at you, which is, why are you running for Congress again?
Well, I'm running because it's a very pivotal time in America. And secondly, I feel we have a do-nothing dysfunctional Congress, and it's a disservice to the American people. And, you know, I've always worked hard at working across the aisle to find bipartisan and sustainable solutions to the problems that we're facing. And I feel as though that's just not happening anymore.
Make a difference. Thanks, Peter. Why don't you talk about the pivotal time? What's so pivotal about this time?
Well, what's so pivotal is that, there are so many issues that I think would make a significant difference depending on which direction people go in this election. Obviously, most people, it seems at this point, have heard of Project 2025 and, and the extreme nature of cutting Social Security and Medicare and doing away with overtime for workers and just so many other things that would be so incredibly harmful. But this isn't just like a potential that they might enact this agenda. I mean, my opponent's part of the Republican Study Committee that did, in fact, propose cuts to Medicare and Social Security. And, people work hard their entire lives, and to not be able to have the benefits that they've worked so hard to provide, this isn't a government handout. This is something people paid into their entire career. But there's so many other issues. Trying to rebuild the middle class, whether, tax policy is huge, whether or not we're going to, as Governor Evers and I did, focus on giving tax breaks to the middle class versus further cutting the corporate rates beyond even what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce asked for, or giving the top 1% a tax break. That makes a tremendous difference. Daycare, being able to make sure children in America can have a good start in life. Very vital. During COVID, they passed the advanced child care credit, made a huge difference. It cut childhood poverty in half in this country. And with divided government, there's not been an effort to try and bring that back, but it's something, being a former Secretary of Revenue, I care deeply about. It's very hard for parents. And I'll tell you one statistic, Matthew, that nearly knocked me off my feet when I heard it, and it's absolutely true. Is the fact that it now costs more for people to put their infants in daycare than it does their teenagers in a UW system or the vocational college system here in Wisconsin. And that's at a time when people can ill afford it. They're at the start of their career often when they have children. And so it's so vital that, we provide that kind of support for people, and that we ensure that daycares can stay open. The economists that work for me at the Department of Revenue said the number one thing we can do about workforce is to make sure that affordable and quality daycare is available for parents and more people will go back to work. And I'll tell you, the first bill I will introduce in the Congress is when people first start to retire and they're working part-time, if they go over too many hours, they lose dollar for dollar off their Social Security. That's outrageous. Maybe that made sense a generation ago. I don't think it ever did, frankly, but it certainly doesn't make sense anymore given the demand we have for workforce and the fact that people have paid into this. And if they want to work longer hours, bravo for them. They're helping the economy as well. So these are just some of the issues. I'm somebody that believes strongly in building the middle class. I'm for Buy American. I passed Buy American provisions at the state level and at the federal level when I was in Congress. And, you know, I believe in getting rid of these disastrous trade deals that have deindustrialized this country and, you know, diminished the middle class. And, you know, it's very important that we make it easier for people to join a union. Unions are the ones that generally have built up the middle class in this country and provided benefits for people. So that's why it's so pivotal.
You know, a lot of the issues you mentioned, Peter Barca, are issues that relate to workers' rights. And, of course, I remember the valiant effort you made when you were minority leader in the Assembly to beat back Act 10. And so I'm grateful to you for that history and leadership that you provided. But look, your opponent right now, Brian Steil, today is in Milwaukee fronting for Donald Trump, who would gut any labor protections that there are, who's against raising the minimum wage, who's anti-union through and through. And you know, Brian Stiles from Janesville, where you had the GM factory, you had the UAW strong. I mean, I would think this contrast between you and your record and Brian Steil and his record on labor rights should be a dramatic one for the constituents in the 1st Congressional District.
Well, it certainly is. And one of the things I talk about on the trail, Matthew, is that, you know, what I learned when I was in the legislature during those awful Walker years for organized labor and for working people is that back then they told the private sector, don't worry, we're not after private sector unions. We're just after the public sector. And then
you're cutting in and out, unfortunately.
And then they told the building trades, they said, don't be worried, we're not after you. And then they got rid of prevailing wage a year and a half later. So, you know, there is no bottom to how far they might go. Very aware. And, you know,
Peter Barca, looking back on those Walker years, how do you make sense of it all, of this Walker counter-revolution we all had to live through?
Well, it's you know, basically that, you know, they are willing to go to the ultimate limit. That's where the extreme right wing is taking it now. You know, look at things like reproductive rights. I mean, you know, the idea that they ended now, you know, frankly, even birth control is at stake with this extreme Supreme Court that we have. IVF protections, they say, well, they don't want to do that. But there's a bill that Senator Gillibrand has. They could pass that bill tomorrow if they're serious about making sure IVF is protected. I mean, as if it isn't bad enough what they've already done and, you know, to take away freedoms for people. And that's just one other major issue that stands out and that we have to, you know, fight very aggressively against that kind of effort to take away people's rights.
Absolutely. I mean, I think this particular seat in this district has had a lot of attention played on it for quite some time. And I'm curious if, you know, if the new maps are playing an effect or how people are talking about things. We've seen a lot of folks have made valiant efforts in that time and in that district. And I'm curious of how you see your path to victory. Does it include, you know, momentum around maps, how people are thinking about districts, think differently? What makes this particular campaign different and that actually there could be a shot at flipping it?
Well, certainly. And thank you, Angela, because it's very important that people understand that we finally have fair maps in Wisconsin. And this seat is dramatically different than when Brian Steil was first elected. And, you know, he had a plus 7% Republican district. And, you know, the irony is he really doesn't get around the district much. I'll tell you, half the people I talk to don't even know how to pronounce his name. They think it's Brian Steil instead of Brian Steil.
That's crazy.
Which surprises me. But I think when you have a plus 7% Republican district, and this is what I saw as the minority leader and Democratic leader in the legislature, is when, you know, when people have safe districts, they tend to, you know, not really cater to their constituents and go to bat for them. His offices, just as one example, when I was in Congress, we had offices in every corner of the district open from 9 to 5 every day. His offices are open 2 hours a week. It's absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen anything so pathetic in my entire life.
I can imagine you, if elected, would not do that and you would hold office hours for more hours in the district.
Well, of course, and I made sure my staff was available on a regular basis. The irony is they had huge battles in some places like Kenosha County, where he demanded that he be in the county administration building because he said he'd be more accessible. And then we come to find out how difficult it is for people because they go out there. His staff is only there. Not that I expect him. He's got to be in Washington, of course. But his staff is there 2 hours a week. So they're bottling up an entire office. They can meet in the lobby for 2 hours a week, for goodness sakes, and not take away taxpayer resources to serve people. It just absolutely is shocking to me, quite frankly.
Peter Bark, I'm wondering what you are making of the Harris Walls campaign right now.
Well, I mean, the biggest issue there is that there's just tremendous energy everywhere I go, especially young people who were so pivotal in electing President Obama. I mean, they're extremely enthusiastic and they're out in force. We see a lot more volunteers coming forward. We see, frankly, an uptick in our contributions on Act Blue and other social media because people, they feel like we've got a very energetic team. And I mean, it may come back to haunt Nikki Haley, those words that she said during her race against Donald Trump, where she said, whichever party replaces her, their 80-year-old potential president at first will probably win the election.
Yeah, I hope she's right about that. Listen, what could you accomplish? What could the Democrats accomplish? What could Harris Walls accomplish if you win your race and Democrats get hold of the House of Representatives and keep the Senate? What big changes could people see in their lives every day?
Unfortunately, we have once again lost Mr. Barca.
I know.
Hopefully he will be able to rejoin us in a moment.
Okay, I do want an answer to that question.
he did talk about his first bill about folks that tend to be kicked off Social Security because they they work too many hours and things like that. So definitely curious how he continues to dig into some of that too.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he has felt the enthusiasm emanating from Harris Walls.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think young people, as he mentioned, are more exhilarated, certainly in the case of my three kids, than they were before. I mean, Joe Biden, and I've said this before, but he was taking us over the cliff. I know he's done a good job in a lot of areas, but I don't think he could have gotten across the finish line, especially after that debate. I took a lot of grief for it when I said it right after that debate, but that was the God's honest truth. And thank God for, Nancy Pelosi and David Axelrod for pushing hard.
And I was going to say, too, I think it's important, and I'm very curious to just wonder how candidates are feeling the effects of the top of the ticket and how that's trickling down into their campaigns. Are they seeing more excitement there? I did hear at some point, I think it was earlier this week or last week, that there is a huge kind of contribution to support down ballot races from the campaign, from the Harris Walls campaign. And so you start to hear them talking about it more. Even when Tim Walz was at, Labor Fest, he was giving a shout out. He said, we got to send these people, to D.C. and being able to talk about, you can't just elect the top of the ticket. You need to give them people that are able to reinforce their agenda. Because if you elect the top of the ticket, but you have no one in Congress to support you, you're not going to get far.
And I used to think that Tammy Baldwin was going to lead the presidential candidate. It still might happen. She might outpoll Harris here. But at this point, I think Harris is helping everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I'm curious how the candidates experience it.
Yeah. So that's, and if Peter Barca reconnects, we'll get him after the break. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm sub-hosting here for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show, and joined by Angela Lang, my co-host for the rest of the show. Actually, Maggie's going to have a little segment from 3 to 3:30, which will be a treat too, on the worst states and best states to work. Wisconsin's not at the top of the best list by
far. Unfortunately.